accession number 210-59, reel 3.
Eric Wheeler, reel 3.
Okay. Well, after that, it was occupying different parts of the line in a static role throughout the winter fighting. But then, I think it would be towards the end of January, we were in the Roermond area, and apparently there was just a bit of a bulge in the line in the Montgomery, I suppose, wanted to straighten that out. Take one division out to give them another division, apparently, for the Rice Wall offensive. So we had to take part in that. It was only a small scale operation, really, compared to the rest of the battles. But the thing I can remember was we were ferried up to this place. It was an attack on a place, a little village called Straighton. And we were ferried up on what they called kangaroos. That was a Sherman tank with the turret off, used for troop carrying. And although we weren't first in the line, we got hit by an anti-tank gun. But I think it was only a 50 millimetre. An 88 millimetre would have done much more damage than that. It knocked two of the bogies out on the tracks. And there was a lot of oil floating about inside. But the thing I remember of that was when we were down in the hull, the thing seemed to be going backward and forward. I suppose it was the shock waves. But when I stuck my head out over the top, everything was sort of immediately stationary. It was quite a queer effect, really. Inside the hull, it was going like this. Stick your head over the top, everything was still, yeah. So we had to debus, and then we were wandering around out there trying to find our own unit. Anyway, eventually we found it.
Were there casualties in the kangaroo?
No, we never had any at all. No. But it was low down, you see. It took the front two bogies off, and it must have penetrated inside, round by the driver's feet, because there was a lot of oil running around there. But they weren't hurt either. And as I say, we just got out, wandered around and found our own platoon. Mind you, they were quite pleased to see us. They were surprised to see us, because they thought we'd been injured or wounded there, but we weren't again. So I was one of the lucky ones, you see. At times, you almost seem to bear a charmed life when you look around and see what's happening to other people. But there's something you can't explain.
So did you get to Straighton?
Oh yes, yeah, it was, you know, we were told afterwards that it was supposed to be a brigade attack on one day. But what they actually did, in order to save the manpower, I suppose, it was three separate battalion attacks on three separate days. But each battalion had the same artillery support as would have been given to the whole brigade. I suppose they'd built their artillery stocks up during the winter, and there was bags of ammo about. But for a small operation like that, the artillery support was really, I suppose, out of proportion. But we weren't sorry, Maya. The more guns you've got, the more damage you can inflict on the enemy. Well, our next operation after that was the Reichswald battles. And there again, it was just chaos and confusion half the time, especially when the Germans flooded one of the roads down around through that area. We were in reserve to start with, and we were behind the 15th Scottish, and they were going to clear a place called Cleve. But we were following up, and this was at night. We made a night approach on that place. But eventually, we were told the 15th Scottish had cleared Cleve, and we were to pass through them farther on down the road. But when we got to Cleve, it was still in the hands of the Germans. And, well, it was chaos, really. We were fighting them, and they were fighting us. It was said afterwards, they didn't know who was the more surprised, the Germans on seeing us, or us on seeing the Germans. But things were a bit chaotic for a few hours, but then we stabilised the position, and then we had to proceed farther on down to a set of crossroads that cut them all behind. And I remember during that advance, we were at the rear of the company, and we looked round there, and we saw a German half track full of troops coming about 150 yards behind us, coming down some farm track towards our rear. I thought they're trying to get in behind us. So we took them on, of course. And eventually we made them withdraw. But when we got back out to the company, we were told off for not keeping up with the main advance. And that's the sort of thing that was going on all the time, you see. But we managed to make this half track pull away, so then we continued to advance. But then we got down on this crossroads, and that was heavy, chaotic fighting there. At one time, the German tanks broke into our position, and we had to withdraw for a few yards. What had happened, we had a forward platoon with an anti-tank gun, and for some reason or other, they had our pit. That was our anti-tank weapon, the infantry, you see. Well, we had an anti-tank gun with us, but he was knocked out, a mobile self-propelled thing. But when he tried to take on these tanks, he was knocked out. So our platoons, our sergeant, he was in charge of us, decided to pull back a bit, where we had another anti-tank gun down the road. And this fellow, he kept on firing. And they managed to make the Germans withdraw then. So then we went back to our original positions. But for a couple of hours there, it was very, very dicey indeed. We found that the nearer we got to Germany, the more determined the resistance came, which I suppose is understandable in a way.
So this was close to Cleves?
Cleve, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you use your weapon during that fight?
Oh, we had to, yeah, yeah.
What weapon were you using?
Oh, Sten's and rifles and LMGs, yeah. But we were taking on the German infantry, you see.
Would you have much of a sight of the enemies, of the Germans?
Okay.
Would you be able to see the Germans?
The tanks were coming down the main road, and the infantry were coming around to our right, across the fields. So there was danger there, you see. Us engaging the infantry, and the tanks working in behind us. It wasn't a very healthy situation for a few couple of hours.
And you were now with A Company, you said?
That's right, yeah, that's right.
Which platoon of A Company? Which platoon?
Do you know, I can't really remember. Now you come to mention it. No.
Which did you prefer being in, C Company or A Company?
Well, you've got to understand that by the time I'd reached A Company, virtually the whole battalion had changed. The men I knew best, of course, were in C Company. But then we lost a lot of those. And with the reinforcements, you just didn't know anyone, you see. And as in Normandy, you'd have reinforcements one day, and a couple of days later, some of them, they were gone. Trying to think. Oh yes, eventually another battalion came up through us and continued the advance down, and then we were concerned in the clearing up around a place called Zanten in Gok, I think. That's right. But by then, of course, we'd reached the River Rhine, and the Germans had gone back over the other side. The Americans were sweeping up through from the right. And eventually, all the Germans on that side of the Rhine had been cleared back. And the next big operation for the army was the crossing of the Rhine. But we weren't concerned with the actual crossing. But after it was cleared over, we went over, and from then on, it was sort of a clearing in mopping up through parts of Germany. But what I found it, they used as few men as they could, if you understand what I mean.
Who used as few men?
Oh, our army. Whereas they would put a company into a certain area, they just put a platoon now, where the resistance wasn't so stiff, you see. Yeah.
Any incidents happened to you as you pushed through Germany?
John, I can't remember much about that. We never had no big battles. Our division didn't. I can't remember any of that. I remember on one occasion we were moving up through an area. It was a wooded area with houses set back in, quite a nice place. Similar in some places to the outskirts of Bournemouth. Trees and bushes with houses built back in amongst them. And we were moving up through this area, and we were the last section in the company. And I saw two figures run down through the bushes. And I thought of the German Home Guard. I thought, they're trying to get in behind us. So I grabbed another bloke, and he went one way, and I went the other. And we chased down through the bushes, and we caught up with them, and that was a couple of kids. One was about 8, the other was about 10, I suppose. Or when they saw us, they put their hands up, and they just screamed in terror. And you heard the expression, stiff with fear. Well, I caught hold of one of their arms to put it down, and that was like the branch of a tree. Anyway, we took the money. We asked them where they lived. Of course, they couldn't understand us. But then I said, where is your house? And apparently the house in German is much about the same as in English. So we took them back there. Of course, all the family were down in the cellar. Well, curiously enough, a short while before that happened, we'd all been issued with a 2-ounce bar of Cadbury's Dairy Milk Chocolate, the original pre-war chocolate that we hadn't seen for years. And as I don't smoke, I thought to myself, I'll sit down in a quiet moment and really enjoy that. Well, when they took these kids back home, the elder one quieted down, but the younger one was still bawling his head off. And I thought of this bar of chocolate in my pouch, and I thought, oh, let's give it to him. So I gave him this bar of chocolate, and he quietened down a bit then. I can only hope he enjoyed it as much as I would have done.
What was the reaction of the German family?
Well, I think they were scared when we went down into the cellar. But after we'd been there, we were only there a couple of minutes, mind, they seemed to thaw out a bit. Yeah. And they, of course, we had to try to give them a good impression of the British soldier. So we didn't have time to get friendly, but they did begin to thaw out a bit, especially when I gave the kid the bar of chocolate. Well, then, of course, we had to dash on.
What do you think these two boys were doing?
Well, the only thing I can imagine, they were running away. The family must have tried to stop them. Of course, the stories you hear and read of what the German nation was told, if the Allies ever got to them, you can understand the fear of a lot of people there. Anyway, as I say, our next attack was on Bremen. And we were attacking the outskirts. But a problem we had there was they put these machine gun nests in the houses where people were living. Now, our orders before the battle was, you don't shoot civilians. And on one or two places, when we got out, we weren't certain of where the fire was coming from, you see. But when we got up to the house where we thought it was coming from, there was no one there, of course, only the family. And one bloke later on said there was fire coming from a house where he was attacking, you know. And he said there was somebody up in the bedroom window looking out the window. And we thought the family would be looking down the road. And when we would go running up, they would tell the German soldiers and they'd clear out. And I'm convinced that was happening in several cases. In one house I went in, I was looking for empties, but there wasn't a single one there. And I'm convinced they had a machine gun in there, firing through the window, open window. But they'd be gone by the time we got up there. Yeah. We didn't lose a lot of men there, I don't think. as I said before earlier, it's where we lost Captain Culverson.
How did that happen?
Well, he was advancing. We were near a German barracks, I think. I wasn't there, but he was riding up this road in the carrier, and there was a sudden burst of fire from somewhere. He was killed.
Did you see it?
Pardon?
Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that, no.
What stead was Bremen in?
Oh, knocked about. We didn't go right into the town centre. We were more on the residential outskirts. But there was quite a lot of damage there, mind. I remember when we were marching back out, the attitude of the German people was hostile. The looks they gave us when we were marching back out. But I found one or two of the men in our regiment who came from the bombed areas had no sympathy at all for them. Yeah. And that was our last battle, that was, yeah. We were pulled out then. We were given orders for the attack on Bremerhaven, which was a bit farther up. But it was then into May then, you see, and we were just hanging around. And everybody was hoping that the war was going to end. One thing I remember there, we were getting aerial photographs of the approaches to Bremerhaven, which is something we'd never been given throughout the campaign. But then the news came through that the war was over. And of course, we were duly thankful for that. But another thing, after we'd settled down in Germany, some of us had another shock. We were posted on a draft for the Far East. But thankfully, they dropped the atom bomb. We got back as far as Belgium, I think. But there again, you see, one or two RHUs we stayed at just for one night, and then on again next morning. But when we got to Belgium, we were hanging about. No one knew why. And then the news of the atom bomb being dropped came through, and eventually our draft was dispersed. And I was lucky enough to go back to my own unit.
What's an RHU?
A reinforcement holding unit. Of course, you can imagine, our morale was pretty low. On that draft, there were men who'd been out in the desert. And they'd been through the Normandy campaign, and now here they were, apparently going back to the Far East. Because in one of the RHUs, as we pulled in to go back, another batch came in out from England, who we thought were going to take our places. So you can imagine the feeling amongst us. It was pretty bitter, really. But eventually, as I say, we never even got back to England.
So where did you go instead of the Far East?
We went back to Germany, and we ended up, when I left the battalion, they were in a different place than when I went back to them. And we were stationed at a place called Bergen, which is only a couple of kilometers from Belsen. In fact, nowadays, Belsen is called Bergen-Belsen, isn't it?
Yes.
And we were at the village there. Our battalion headquarters was in Belsen Barracks. And if it hadn't been for the DPs, we would have been in the barracks with them. So we made the occasional visit to Belsen. Of course, by the time we got there, it had been cleaned up a lot. But some of the inmates there, you can understand what it was like at the time of liberation.
What did they look like?
Oh, terrible. They were just skin and bone, some of them. Yeah.
How did you get on with the Germans in Bergen?
Well, after a few months, we became reasonably friendly. I don't say very friendly, but there again, a bloke like me, you see, who'd never seen any, whose homes hadn't been bombed out or anything like that, had a certain amount of tolerance. But some of the people, mine from the bombed areas, though, they had no time for the Germans at all. And you can understand that.
What type of things were you doing in Bergen?
Well, not a lot, because we were more or less, to be perfectly honest, we're just waiting for demob then. We did a few parades and a few patrols. One thing out there, they had a bit of trouble with some of the Polish people who would raid German farmhouses and all that sort of thing. In fact, our battalion formed a special patrol to deal with them. But to a certain extent, they turned a blind eye to some of it, until one night, some of these Poles fired on our bloke, who were going out there, and after that, our attitude changed to it.
Did they hit anybody?
No, they didn't, no. No, that's one thing.
What were these dispersed persons after? What were the Poles after when they raided the farm?
Food, mostly. In fact, they got to one place, and they actually killed a cow out there. But then, with our blokes approaching, they left it. Food was the priority for everybody out there then.
Did you have enough food?
Oh, in the army, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
What else did you do in the occupation of Germany?
Oh, not a lot, really. We used to sort of patrol. Our company commander in Bergen was the Burgermeister, the local Burgermeister. And he had the administration of the village. It was his job, you see.
What was the name of your company commander?
Was it Major Robbins? You've seen him, have you?
Yes, I have.
Did he mention that?
I can't remember.
No.
Who had been your company commander in C Company?
When we went over, it was Major Jeans. But then Major Robbins took over. I believe he was in charge. Part of Normandy. He was company commander at Arnhem, I think. Yeah.
How did you get on with Major Robbins?
Oh, reasonably well, really. See,